Here are some of the news headlines we're watching.
By the time the conference was over, the president won a pledge.
So Americans worshiping government over God.
Extremely rare safety move by a nation.
17 years the Palestinians and Israelis negotiated.
Friends, welcome to In the Market with Janet Parshall. Thank you so much for joining us there. Get your passports ready because we're winging our way down under, where we're going to get caught up with our favorite Scottish apologist who has a thing or two to say about a thing or two. But I want to give you some news first. Newly confirmed U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert Kennedy said that the president has asked him to study the safety of the abortion pill mifepristone after regulations were relaxed under the Biden administration. This is a very good news story. So apparently the newly confirmed secretary said that the president asked him to, quote, study the safety signals of the abortion pill. And that's the first drug in the chemical abortion regime. Remember, there are two pills that a woman has to take. And Kennedy said, I think that it's worth doing. So he's very much in support of studying the pill. And this, by the way, comes after there was great concern that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration moved to take away some of the safeguards that were in place in terms of the usage of the pill. Certified doctors, not to be used beyond a certain state. Now, unfortunately, mifepristone can be delivered through the mail and at major retail pharmacies. By the way, you might want to find out if your local pharmacy is one of those people distributing the pills. And then again, carefully consider whether or not that's where you want to go to give them your business if you know that they are becoming de facto abortion clinics by distributing the abortion drug. So doctors have warned about the risks associated with taking these pills for a long time. We've talked to Dr. Ingrid Scope several times on this. She's an OBGYN, 25 years of practice. She talks about the admits into the emergency rooms, the women who have had all kinds of injuries. Of course, this goes underreported. And so Kennedy confirmed what he said was the suppression of information about the potential harms caused by the drug. So he's very much in tune with this. During the Biden administration, he said recently during an interview, the NIH did something that was inexcusable, which is to tell doctors and patients not to report injuries. That's not a good policy. So this confirms everything that you and I have been hearing about the dangers, about the government politicizing the use of this particular drug. So it was put forth on grease tracks. It's out there now. It is probably responsible, not probably, it is responsible for more abortions than the walk into the clinic kind of abortion that we've known for so long in this country. So pray that really the truth and the harm of this drug will be made known and that some safeguards might be put back under policy through the HHS to protect women when it comes to this abortifacient. That's extremely important. Israel is getting ready to mourn. Hostages are being returned tomorrow. Four bodies, most famously the Bibas mom and her two sons. The father of the Bibas family was released on February 1st, doesn't know the condition of his wife and children. And the Israeli government is saying, we will not confirm their deaths until we've made a positive identification. So just wait. They'll take receipt of the bodies tomorrow and they'll see what happens. But in the meantime, they are absolutely the representation of the horror of a terrorist organization like Hamas. And yet, despite that, there is a kind of spiritual blindness associated with this issue. I want you to hear the repartee between two British journalists and how one British journalist was actually trying to defend the treatment of the hostages. Have a listen.
Hamas has said they believe that terms of the ceasefire have been breached. They're not going to release any more hostages. Donald Trump has said all the hostages out by 12 on Saturday. We think he means midday. All the hostages, not just the next three, all the hostages out, or all hell breaks loose. He said that's what he would do. He's been backing Israel. Do you think that would focus minds? I mean, there's no reason why Hamas couldn't release all of the hostages on Saturday, could they? I mean, all of them. What, is there any argument that you, as someone who desperately cares about innocent people, those hostages are innocent people, are they not? Is there any reason why Hamas couldn't and shouldn't release them all?
Once the hostages go, and every act of kindness that has been shown to Israel has just been backlash.
Sorry? Every act of kindness?
Yes.
Are you kidding me? Every act of... What were the acts... Do tell me what the acts of kindness were. The pitch of bread once every 3 days for those men kept in a tunnel for 16 months? How generous, how kind.
And you're focusing on the three men.
Oh, silly me.
If we look at the women.
Oh, you're going to go there. You're going to go there. Didn't they look well and healthy, Yvonne? Didn't they look well? They must have had a wonderful time at that holiday camp that Hamas ran for them for the last 16 months. When you were held captive, when you were held hostage by the Taliban, you were fed. You had cigarettes. You were looked after. You weren't in fear for your life. Those women, those men, the children, the elderly, the sick, they lived every day.
I would be in an Israeli prison, that's for sure.
Absolute abject nonsense.
We've had a doctor who was raped to death. And then the Israelis called it self-defence. When did rape become...
You tell me. Let's ask your friends in Hamas, Yvonne. I'm not saying there aren't atrocities committed by some Israeli forces, and some of them end up in court, and rightly so, and they should all end up in court. I'm not defending any atrocities that are committed by any side. I want to know, what were the acts of kindness that Hamas did to the... that have been thrown back in their face by Israel? What were those acts of kindness?
Well, they gave them goodie bags. I don't know what was in them, but they gave them gifts. They gave them little mementos, Palestinian mementos.
The acts of kindness from your hostage taker, from the man who's kidnapped, the man who's kidnapped you and terrified you and starved you for months.
Yvonne,
what's happened to you? What's happened to you?
What's happened to me, Julia, I have watched day in, day out pictures of children being blown to shreds.
Yeah. Do you know who put those
by
out?
American and British bombs. I have watched war crimes being committed.
Yeah. You know who put that? You know who put those images out?
Like
Hamas.
This.
You know why we never see images of Hamas fighters being blown up? Because Hamas don't allow those out. Who put those children, who put those innocent people in harm's way? Hamas.
Oh, that's ridiculous, Julia.
That's ridiculous.
They
went into Israel to massacre innocent people and they took hostages. Were they surprised that Israel struck back and wanted their hostages back? No, of course they weren't. They knew what would happen. They brought down that.
Goodie bags. Can you believe that? Well, when we come back, we're going to wing our way to Australia. And I bet David Robertson has something to say about this interchange. Interesting, isn't it? That's why I say, and I will say it again, the core of this is spiritual blindness. I'm anxious to find out what David Robertson thinks, and we'll hear right after this. There is a movement in our nation that's trying to redefine God, creating a spiritual eclipse. The church needs to know how to respond. That's why I've chosen Dr. Erwin Lutzer's book, The Eclipse of God, as this month's truth tool. He'll encourage you to return to the biblical God of truth and salvation. Ask for your copy of The Eclipse of God when you give a gift of any amount to In the Market. Call 877-JANET-58, that's 877-JANET-58, or go to inthemarketwithjanetpartial.org. We always look forward to our regular conversations with David Robertson. He's a Scottish Presbyterian minister who's currently the minister of Scotskirk, Newcastle, in New South Wales, in Australia. He's a former moderator of the Free Church of Scotland, having served for 33 years in not one, but two Presbyterian churches in the Highlands of Scotland and the city of Dundee. Glorious places to serve the Lord, by the way. He is a broadcaster, a writer, a blogger, a columnist. He hosts the Quantum of the We Flee podcast. It's fabulous, by the way. And if you have not connected with him vis-a-vis his website, theweflee.com, you're missing. Not only does he have stellar Bible studies, and they're really wonderful, but he comments on the world around him, all from a biblical perspective. So he knows the word, and he practices, if I may, applied Christianity, applying the whole truth of the whole world, of word, to the whole world around us. And he does it in a wonderfully instructive and winsome way. David, it is a joy to have you with us. Thank you so much. Roll up your sleeves. We got a lot of territory to cover. You talked about these two journalists. I was absolutely stunned. Now, we know in the British press, and I say this respectfully, there is an even more palpable anti-Semitic bias than there is in the U.S. press, and we're certainly not without blame in our press as well. But it is, I don't know if it goes back to the Balfour Declaration or what, but it's palpable anti-Semitism in the English press. This exchange was stunning. The woman literally was justifying Hamas's terrorist activity by saying they gave the hostages goodie bags. You have a thought or two on this. I'd love to hear it.
Well, just the same as yours, I actually think just playing the clip itself says more than enough. Any intelligent, sane person, and I'm assuming all your listeners are that, are it's just wicked. You know, it's a bit like, you know, it's the equivalent of somebody saying, well, do you know, there were Nazi soldiers in Auschwitz who were quite kind to people. They gave them food occasionally. You know, it's at that same level. I think it's astonishing.
Yeah, I do too. And again, to make my point, it's interesting because I just read a report the other day, David, that the BBC actually did a piece called Gaza, How to Survive a War Zone. And in it, apparently, they focused in on a 14-year-old boy who turns out not to be just a regular citizen of Gaza, but he happens to be a member of what's called Hamas royalty. So again, you jerry-rig this to get people to buy into your particular worldview. It's absolutely stunning. Talk to me about the fact that what will happen is when it is now officially proclaimed that these four individuals of the Bibas family are dead, the mother, excuse me, it's going to be four bodies, three of the Bibas family. The dad was released February 1st, but they became globally recognizable. Two red-haired little boys, and both of them were killed along with the mother. Again, the Israeli government is saying, we're not going to say that until we make a confirmation that it is in fact them. But once that confirmation is made, do you think that will serve as a wake-up call to the fact that Hamas is not a duly elected political body, but they are a group of demonic terrorists?
No, it won't make a single difference to people who, what they do is they play this game called equivalence, where they'll say, yeah, you know, okay, nobody likes hearing about people dying, but... And then they then say, well, what about all the people who've been killed? Now, it's not equivalent because Hamas attacked Israel. It's a terrorist organization. It deliberately went for civilians. And horrific as the war in Gaza is, and undoubtedly, I'm certain like in every army, there are atrocities committed. But Israel has a legal system where people can be held accountable for that. Hamas do it as a matter of policy. Mm-hmm. They have in their statement, in their manifesto, that when you see a Jew, kill them. Now, people may think, oh, come on, where does this all come? There's been another story, I don't know if you picked up on this, which is horrific. Here in Australia, there were two nurses, and they were on an internet thing where they spoke with a man who said he was from Israel. And these two nurses, who were both Muslims, the nurses in Australia, they said that, you know, you're going to die and you're going to go to hell. And if you came to be treated by us, we would kill you. And the male nurse boasted that he'd already killed Jews. Now, this is a public state hospital in Australia. What is even more astonishing that is not only that that happened, but 50 Muslim organizations and individuals within Australia defended these nurses, saying that that they'd been provoked and that, you know, that this was just another example of Islamophobia. So this is exactly what happens. People do the equivalence game. They say, oh, you're Islamophobic. Look, to say Hamas is an evil terrorist organization is not to defend everything that Israel or every Israeli soldier does.
Exactly.
Nor is it to attack every Muslim. There are plenty of Muslims who hate what Hamas does. Why do you think that Muslim countries won't take Hamas people into their country? Mm-hmm. They won't. So, you know, we need to be much more, how will I put it, subtle in how we think about this, but not so subtle that we don't recognize evil when it's evil. And Hamas deliberately use their own civilians in order to create more trouble and win a political war. And unfortunately, gullible people in the West buy into it. I think Hamas has lost this war on the ground, but I think they've won it in the propaganda stakes.
I think you're spot on, David. And you know what's interesting? Here in the United States, just recently, within the last 24 hours, a group of anti-Semitic protesters showed up in the part of New York City where the Orthodox Jews live, and they started to physically attack them. So there's assault, there's battery, there's certainly hate crimes, if you wanted to use that standard in American law as well. And I said to my husband, this reminds me of Berlin in the 1930s, the late 1930s. I don't know how you can just show up in a neighborhood and decide that you're going to physically accost people just because of who they are and not have that be the screamer headline in every newspaper, not just in the United States, but around the globe. That's how it begins. And if we don't catch it in its first steps, then it spreads like a pathogen and it becomes an ugly, ugly, deadly contagion. When we come back, let me play a little bit of audio of those nurses because I think that's significant. And there's so much I want to talk about, including free speech and Scotland in particular, because I'm watching this with great interest. David Robertson is with us. He joins us. I neglected to say it because his audio sounds like he's sitting in the chair next to me. He is all the way in Australia, where it's tomorrow and it's tonight here. And it's a different time zone, a different continent, the other half of the globe. I just love it. Thank you, God, for the technology. And so it'll hold, and we'll continue to talk with David right after this.
Two Australian nurses have been caught in a shocking anti-Semitic tirade against an Israeli. In a video posted to TikTok, the pair can be heard bragging about killing and refusing to treat Israeli patients. The male nurse says that despite the Israeli's, quote, pretty eyes, he will be killed and sent to Jahannam, which effectively means hell. The female nurse says the Israeli will be killed because, quote, it's Palestine's country, not your country. Take a listen.
How are you, man?
Good, how are you, my man?
Pretty good. Are you a nurse, a doctor?
I'm a doctor, my man.
A doctor? For what?
In hospital. What about you? Where are you from?
I'm from Israel, from the Holy Land.
You know what? I'm going to be really honest with you.
All right.
I'm going to be really honest with you. You actually got a really, really beautiful eyes.
Thank you,
but
man.
I'm so upset that you're Israeli. Like, eventually you're going to get killed and you're going to go to Jahannam, inshallah.
But
these pretty eyes, they should stay in this world for longer.
Why do you think I'm gonna get killed?
It's Palestine's country, not
Hello,
your country, you piece
how
of
are you?
Shit.
What's your name?
One day, your time will come and you will die the most
We spread
Listen to me.
Peace.
Listen to me.
And
when
you spread
when your time comes.
How are you doctors?
Comes, Wait. I want you to remember my
have,
face.
Okay,
so
okay.
Gotcha. That you will
I have
die
a question
the most disgusting
though. Death. All right, for sure. I have a question
okay,
though.
Yeah, what's
I have a question. Let's say an Israeli. God forbid.
I won't treat them. I'll kill them.
You'll kill them? So if an Israeli is in Australia and God forbid something happened to him and he comes
Not
to
God
your
forbid.
Hospital,
I hope to God.
Would you
Listen,
kill him?
You have no idea how many Israeli Haradok came to this hospital and I sent him to Jahannam.
For real?
I literally sent him to Jahannam.
The nurses in the video are Ahmad Rashad Nadir and Sarah Abu Lebde. They both work at Bankstown Hospital in southwest Sydney. The Premier of New South Wales confirmed the two were Sydney health workers and assured the public the two had been stood down. Health Minister Ryan Park had this to say.
They are vile, disgusting and deranged individuals. Well, I don't know what explanation any of these individuals could possibly give that in any way would justify this disgusting, vile behaviour. I don't want to leave a slither of light to allow any of them to be able to think that they will ever work for New South Wales Health again.
The family of the female nurse reacted with fury when approached by journalists asking for answers on their daughter's comments.
While the family of the female nurse lashed out.
What do you have to say about the allegations that Sarah...
Becoming aggressive to journalists.
Mate.
Listen to me, brother.
All right, okay. I need my phone back.
A man identifying himself as her uncle saying she's sorry.
No, she is not a threat. No, she will never be a threat.
An investigation is underway to determine whether any patients have been neglected or even murdered at the Bankstown Hospital. The latest rant comes in the wake of a sustained rise in anti-Semitism since Hamas's attack on Israel on 7th of October 2023 and the ensuing war in Gaza. Brits have watched on uneasily as hundreds of thousands have regularly taken to the streets to demonstrate against the war, which often include anti-Semitic chants.
West Bank, Gaza, it's about time we globalise the Intifada! Yeah!
And just this week, a Labour MP has been suspended over anti-Semitic WhatsApp messages, in which he wished death on pensioners who don't vote Labour.
And I was watching proceedings in Parliament where another MP said that she wanted all aid to Israel cut off immediately. And the Prime Minister, interestingly, said no, because if we cut off all of the deals that we've made in terms of jets, etc., they will have no defensive tools whatsoever. David Robertson is with us. David, this was practically in your backyard in New South Wales. You're hearing stories there that we didn't hear here in the United States, but I'm glad our listeners got to hear exactly what was said out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. What is happening now in Australia regarding these two people who, by the way, weren't doctors, they were nurses?
Yeah, they are nurses. At the moment, nothing's happening. I mean, the other thing that you may not be aware of is that a couple of weeks ago, they discovered a caravan. The police discovered a caravan full of explosives with notes inside indicating that it was to be placed next to a synagogue in Sydney. Mm. And the irony is, or not the irony, the astonishing is that the police had some difficulty in saying it was a terrorist event. You know, if you've got a caravan full of explosives threatening to blow up, you know. So what's happening is there is a significant Muslim vote now, and that is the same within the United States, and it's the same within Europe. And this all gets tied together. I mean, I'm sure some of your listeners will know, and if they don't, they should know about an incredibly brave woman called Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who is a Somalian woman who became an Islamic kind of fundamentalist. She emigrated to the Netherlands. She then realized what was happening to Muslim women by Muslim men and started speaking out against it. She was threatened. She had to have police protection. One of her friends was killed. She made a film and the filmmaker was killed. And she's since gone to the United States. She's currently, I believe, right now speaking at the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship, I think it's called, in London. She's an amazing woman. And she herself has warned us continually about this as someone from this background. Now, again, you have to say it's not all Muslims, right, but you also have to say that what the left have done in the West have made the phenomenal error of assuming that Muslims are just like another version of Christianity. You know, they're kind of like Anglicans with a bit more bite or something.
Right. Exactly.
And that is not the case. It just really isn't the case. And now it's in too deep.
Yeah.
So, you know, this kind of anti-Semitic incident, that was particularly shocking. But I mean, as I said before the break, the fact that there are 50 Muslim organizations here in Australia who've defended these nurses should tell you all that you need to know.
Unbelievable. More with David Robertson right after this. Let me give a big shout out to our Partial Partners. Thank you, friends. Partial Partners are becoming the backbone of this ministry. Their generous monthly gifts allow us to provide relevant, compelling programming every day. When you become a Partial Partner, you'll receive private emails directly from me, a weekly audio message only you will hear, and special behind-the-scenes updates as well. Become a Partial Partner today by calling 877-JANET-58 or go to inthemarketwithjanetpartial.org.
Since exposing anti-Semitic hate in our health system, influencer Max Pfeiffer has doubled his followers, and today he addressed his new legion of fans.
First, I want to thank everyone who shared the video, showed support, and helped in a fight against these two anti-Semites.
The Israeli national, now pivotal to the criminal investigation and potential charges against two former Bankstown nurses.
Yesterday, I spoke with the NSW police again. Since this is an ongoing investigation, I can't share details. But I'm confident they have enough evidence, including my uncut video.
Detectives are waiting on his official signed statement. It will then be put to the DPP to see if it can be used in court.
I hope the NSW police are doing everything they can to bring the truth to light.
On the first sitting day of State Parliament, stamping out racism was high on the agenda.
Those who sow hatred, who seek to vilify their fellow community members, should feel the face of the law. soon their behaviour will be criminal.
New laws will make it illegal to intentionally and publicly incite hatred towards a person or group on the grounds of race, an offence that carries a maximum penalty of 2 years in prison.
These are big changes, but they're necessary, I believe, for Sydney's future.
Some religious leaders and marginalised groups say the bill offers them no protection while privileging others. The government is attempting to rush this legislation through Parliament, and if they get bipartisan support, it could be law by the end of the week. But it won't apply retrospectively, including to the nurses from Bankstown. James Wilson, Nine News.
That is a Nine News Australia report as a follow-up to what we just heard before about the anti-Semitic rant of those two nurses. David Robertson is with us, Minister of Scotskirk, Newcastle, New South Wales in Australia, broadcaster, writer, blogger, columnist, and hosts the Quantum of the Weefly podcast. All excellent. So, David, this is a perfect setup as we segue now into a conversation about free speech, and this ties into remarks made by the Vice President of the United States. But it also highlights some very severe issues because his speech, paradoxically, while decried by some as being too aggressive and factually inaccurate, was playing in the culture at the same time 60 Minutes, the news broadcast here in the United States, was highlighting this absolutely horrific program they have in Germany where they literally knock on the door and arrest people, take away their electronic devices if they post something that's deemed to be, quote, offensive or insulting, nebulous terms in the law. Let me start first with this proposal in Australia, then let's look at the European continent. You know, at first blush, this sounds like a good idea, but the antidote for speech you don't agree with is more speech, not less. If this man who was an influencer hadn't in fact posted what these people had said, they wouldn't have been exposed for the cockroaches who live under the carpet that they are. Why now this legislation? And does it not cast a pall over free speech going forward? Break this down for me.
Yeah, sure. The problem with hate speech is who gets to define hate.
Exactly.
So, you know, let's say that, I mean, I would never do this, but let's say I made a joke about Americans. Well, someone could be really offended and, you know, feel, you know, they could say it was hateful. If I object to abortion, then the Scottish government could say that I'm hateful towards and harming women who've had abortions. So, I mean, there are so many different ways that this it sounds good. I mean, who's going to be for hate? Nobody. Well, you would hope that nobody would be for hate. But ironically, I think hate speech laws really end up increasing hate. And I think the laws that we've already got now, it's very interesting. Coming back to the J.D. Vance thing, which is really important, he made this major emphasis on free speech. Now, I have to say this. You'll forgive me saying this. Janet, you're no longer my favorite American. J.D. Vance is now my favorite American.
I passed the title on.
That speech for me was the most courageous and the most significant political speech I've heard in 20 years. And I really mean that. I thought it was utterly brilliant. I tell you this, you'll hear American commentators saying, oh, the Europeans hated it. No, the European elites hated it. But many, many Europeans were just so thankful that someone had the courage to stand up to say what all of us know to be true. And I keep asking people, this misinformation, could you tell me what it is that he put forward? Because I couldn't find any. But his big point was freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. Now, where freedom of speech becomes limited is I don't have the right to incite violence against people or to encourage people to commit crimes. But I do have the right to say things which may be incredibly offensive to people, and so do others. They could be really wrong. It would be really silly. It could be really, you know, and from a Christian point of view, it could be immoral. But if you start limiting speech according to what the people in power say is acceptable, then you no longer live in a free country. And that's the key issue. And that's what Vance got spot on.
Well, in his speech, and this is germane to a piece that you've written, and I want to break this down a little bit more, he actually referenced what was going on in Scotland. In fact, He rebuked the Scottish government for sending out letters in October of 2024, cautioning citizens that, quote, even private prayer within their own homes may amount to breaking the law. And he was referring to Scotland's Safe Access Zones Act. Now, I have to tell you, I love X because it is so global, it is so immediate, and it really is built on the idea that if it's speech you disagree with, then come back with an opposing viewpoint. Even the aspect of community notes, this isn't true. So it is quintessentially the marketplace of ideas. I have witnessed police officers outside of an abortion clinic where a woman was standing silently and they arrested her. So I've seen it with my own eyes, whether or not the elites choose to disagree with the facts checking in the Vance speech. It's happening. Talk to me about this and why this is a real threat to free speech in Scotland first and the European continent writ large.
Okay. I mean, I'm Janet, I'm, as you know, a kind of an expert on everything at a shallow level, and I don't know many things at depth, but I know this in depth. And I've actually just written an article for Christian Today, which will be it's been accepted, and it'll be going up, I think, today or tomorrow.
Excellent.
I'll put a link to it on precisely this issue in Scotland, particularly J.D. Vance's claim that private prayer in homes was being criminalised. And that the Scottish government have come out and said, he's lying. Well, I've got proof that he's not lying, because a letter was sent to anyone who had a home within one of these access areas, it's about 200 meters of an abortion clinic. And they're told that if it would be a crime outside your home, it'll be a crime inside your home. Prayer, standing and praying outside an abortion clinic, even silently, even with no notices, deliberately not going up to people, not even wearing a sign, just standing and praying silently, you can be penalized for. Therefore, if the same standard applies, you can be penalized in your home. Now, if you have the curtain shut, no one's ever going to know. But supposing you put on Facebook that you're praying for all the women who are walking past, you could be penalized for breaking the law. It is an absolute authoritarianism. And governments go back and forward. And why they seek to justify this, you know, they'll allow all different kinds of protests. They'll allow, here we had in Sydney, people chanting, you know, the Jews to the chamber, the Jews gas the Jews. And that was permitted. Standing and praying silently outside an abortion clinic, or even in your own home if it's within that area, it shows you the evil and the perversity that's going on. So, you know, Vance was, again, he was just so spot on, and he's really well informed. And, you know, the great thing he does it so calmly and intelligently and nicely. But, I mean, you should see the looks on the faces of the people in the audience. They couldn't believe that someone was actually telling them the truth and bursting their bubble. And I think we've got to speak the truth. That is really speaking truth to power.
Yeah. Amen to that. You know, and I often like to point out, David, that this isn't for here in the United States, and your rules in the UK are a bit different. And we're certainly seeing some interesting challenges in Australia, particularly when it comes to Elon Musk and his platform X. But in the United States, we have this idea that we have this robust debate. There are certain parameters that the Supreme Court has put in place. But the principle, at least, has been the idea of open dialogue back and forth. I think that is what caught the elites in Europe off guard when he was at this Munich security conference, that he talked about the enemy within. As they're starting to advance technology, it's interesting because they're also moving forward the idea of putting parameters around speech. And you can't have a free people if you don't have free speech. Why this is paramount for the believer is because the directive has been given to us to go and tell. If we sleep through this like a child's fairy tale, like Rip Van Winkle, and we allow this constant nipping away at the idea of free speech, it's just one tick away, isn't it, to say that the most offensive speech is the one that declares that Jesus is Lord and no man comes to the Father but by him. It is referred to as the offense of the cross. We fool ourselves if we think that the hateful message isn't going to be eventually and in short order the gospel of Jesus Christ. I don't say that out of fear, by the way. I say it out of the power and the authority of that message, and that means you're going to stir up the gates of hell to try to do everything to stop the transmission of that message.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's another illustration of this. Ironically, Scottish politicians like the Scottish Green leader, Patrick Harvey, were saying, of course, we've got free speech. The Scottish National newspaper today has the headline of Patrick Harvey demanding that Jordan Peterson be cancelled for speaking at Glasgow Hydro, which is a big entertainment venue. So on the one hand, they're shouting, hey, we've got free speech. And on the other hand, if you disagree with that, we're not letting you speak. You know,
wow.
I mean, you think, you know, how daft could be. I mean, here's the thing. I would get cancelled in Scotland for saying, for agreeing with J.D. Vance that Scotland has a cancel speech culture.
Yes. Yes.
And people don't see that. You know, whenever anyone says, oh, like secularism or atheism or whatever it is, left-wing progressivism, it's based on rationalism. No, it's not. It's the most irrational and dumbed-down ideology that humanity has yet managed to bring. Mm. And, you know, when I got the rationality...
And we'll be right back. David Robertson is with us, a very, very talented man, and God uses him in so many powerful ways. Not only is he a minister at a church in Newcastle in New South Wales in Australia, but he just really is a cultural apologist, listens to what's going on in the world around us and responds beautifully, as evidenced by this article that he just got published, when I'm thrilled, and I'm glad he's going to put a link in that's going to be in Christian Today. And it's just this marvelous fact-checking of the vice president's speech when he was in Scotland, dealing very much with the issue of the problem that he's seeing in Europe is a problem that we're going to prevent here in the United States. So, David, it's interesting. I'm not even going to cite the source because I'm not going to give him free publicity. But this article says, revealing its own bigotry and bias. It says clearly, and I quote, Vance's eyes were more fixed on his own future presidential bid, playing more to religious fundamentalists back home than to anyone who might seriously care about free expression. His 18-minute speech invoked God 3 times and prayer 9 times while saying nothing about the main issue for which delegates had gathered, Russia's unprovoked onslaught on Ukraine. We'll push away the Ukrainian-Russian issue. That's a quagmire for a moment. And let's just go back to this idea that this person's own bigotry, he can't stand the idea of prayer, and he certainly doesn't like the idea of invoking God's name. But therein lies the distinction, which the European elites don't recognize. Our rights don't come from kings or parliaments. In the United States, our rights come from God. That inalienable word is used purposely, pointedly, and protectively. When your rights don't come from government, but they come from God, government's single and sole purpose is to protect, enhance, and preserve those rights. That's what the European elites didn't get, and I think that's what bothered them more than anything. Going back to your stellar article that you wrote before, you talk about the fact that the facts stand out, that they absolutely can be affirmed, and that in no way, shape, or form did J.D. Vance in his speech represent what was going on as being wrong. But you talk about this cancel culture that is happening all over Scotland. By the way, deja vu all over again. You and I had a conversation when they canceled in Glasgow. They canceled Franklin Graham. They wanted him not to use a facility there as well. So nothing new under the sun. So how does the believer respond to this? Because it's no longer hearsay. It's not rumor. We have absolute indisputable evidence that free speech, to use a British term, is in the dock. And if we don't, again, use whatever we can within the parameters of government that we have, the ability to let our voices be heard, work through our representatives to try to preserve and protect free speech, it is a right that, if not used, will be lost. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, it's interesting. It's exactly the same venue, the Glasgow Hydro, that Franklin Graham was cancelled from. Well, he gives us an answer, actually. He actually sued and he won.
Yes, he did.
And he got damages and he was allowed to go back. So that's one way you can do it. And I think Paul did that. I think Paul appealed to the emperor, for example.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's wrong to do that. I'm not saying that politics is our primary way, but I'm saying in a democratic country, we have a right to use the law. The other thing I think we do is speak out. And one of the most wonderful things that has happened in recent years, I think, is the internet can be used for bad, but can also be used for good. So right now, you and I are discussing, and this is going out over the internet, and, you know, people keep trying to shut me up, you know, and they keep warning me, if you do this, we'll cut you off and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, oh yeah, fine. I mean, the only person who can do that at the moment is your producer. And, you know, he'll do that when we get to the top of the hour, even though we're enjoying ourselves so much.
On that note, by the way, can I apologize? The tyranny of the clock. Forgive me for having to cut you off, but it was a hard break. So forgive me for that.
No, that's okay. That's okay, Janet. I love it. I mean, you know, I love the way you do interviews. You're a bit like Jordan Peterson. When Jordan Peterson says he's going to do an interview, you know full well that it's not like a journalistic interview. It's going to be a back and forth of ideas, which I think is great. And that's why I love doing this with you.
Well, but I think,
you know, we can talk about free speech in that way. I mean, we'd one of the things that we'd thought about discussing was this kind of this crazy thing about surfboards being sexist.
Yes.
You know, and you know, it's just I want the freedom to be able to say, yeah, you know, most surfboards are built for males because most people who do surfing are males, and if there were enough women who did surfing, then the free market would mean that you'd get a lot of more female shaped surfboards. I know that sounds ridiculous, but just because there's different strengths. But my point about it is this: we don't want government saying this is our ideal of how we get this. So we want 50-50 men surfing or women surfing. We want 50-50 men playing football, women playing football. I mean, they don't say we want 50-50 men being bricklayers and women being bricklayers, you know, or anything like that. So for me, coming back to the free speech thing, we should be able to discuss all these things and say all these things. And people should be able to say outrageous things. And I should be able to say, hey, I think on Ukraine, perhaps I might say so-and-so is right, so-and-so is wrong, but I don't know. But the point is, we need the freedom to be able to discuss. And I just think Vance was perfect on that. I really do. And, in Europe, I mean, it's astonishing. One of the things that really got them was the German elections are coming up this month.
Yes.
In fact, this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned the fact that the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland, who some people regard as very far right, and maybe some of them are, but a lot aren't. And they're running at about 20-21% in the polls at the moment. And the kind of idea is, let's shut them out. I'll give you an example of this. I know somebody who was going to send an article to Australia to a friend here on the AfD, and he decided not to because he thought if he even sent it, the police might visit him.
Wow.
Now, that is insane. You know, but that's the level at which they are at. And by the way, in Germany, you're not allowed to homeschool. You could go to jail for homeschooling. Mm. So I don't think the Germans have any right to lecture people on authoritarianism given their past. I mean,
yes.
There does seem to be a tendency to say, we will control all of this. And it really is quite horrific.
Yeah.
So, you know, in America, there's many things about America I'd be prepared to criticize, as you know. But one of the great things that you have that you absolutely must keep is this the right for freedom of speech, freedom mm-hmm. of religion and freedom of speech. Without that, I think America would cease to exist. And by the way, what Vance was saying was he's saying your greatest enemy in the West. He did speak about the war in Ukraine, by the way. He did speak about Russia. And he said the way to defeat Russia, he said, this is our greatest threat is not Russia or China. Our greatest threat is the enemy within. And by that, he meant those who, in the name of defending Western values, are undermining them. That is by far the greatest threat to America. Those who say they're, you know, defending America, but then undermining the very values that made America great.
Exactly. David, I'm going to end this conversation with your words because it's how you end your excellent article. The fact, you wrote, that power doesn't like it doesn't make it false. Would that other Christians have the courage to do so and stop bowing the knee to the Baals of contemporary ideology. I love that. The Baals of contemporary ideology. That's why we love David Robertson. He teaches us how to do just that, not bow the knee. David, thank you so much. Thanks, friends. We'll see you next time on In the Market with Janet Parshall.